That beautiful tune is the title track of the Carolina Chocolate Drops' most recent CD called Leaving Eden, and featured Rhiannon Giddens on the vocal and fiddle. And the other members are Dom Flemons and Hubby Jenkins, Layla McCalla, and I don't think we had the beatboxer on that particular track. But the Carolina Chocolate Drops will be at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts tonight at 7:30 after a really successful show they did at the Krannert Center last fall during the Elnora Guitar Festival. And I was in the audience for that performance and absolutely loved it, and have been delighted that we have had the chance to have them perform on the show live for us, which they are going to do. A little bit unrepresentative of what you'll hear tonight, just because Rhiannon was not able to make the show. She will be at the show tonight. So we have Dom and Hubby and Layla with us. Thank you all very much for coming in.
No problem. Yeah, she sends her regards that she couldn't make it.
Well, I was certainly looking forward to asking her some questions about her voice. So we'll talk about her in her absence.
All right.
And we'll just say nothing but nice things. Dom, you and I talked, it must have been about 2 years ago, I guess, just on the telephone, when the group was in the area at the time, not at the Krannert Center, I think performing somewhere in Bloomington, if I remember right. You and Rhiannon are the two founding members. At the time, you had none of these other folks with you, I think.
Yeah, we had another fellow named Justin Robinson with us, and he was with us when we first started the group. And then he got tired of playing on the road, and at the end of 2010. So then 2011, we brought in Hubby Jenkins, who I'd known for quite a few years through the New York root scene. And then through interesting serendipitous circumstances, we met Layla's sister, and then she introduced us to Layla. And so she'd guessed it on the album, and then Adam was touring with us for a while, but it got to be a bit much for him because we keep a pretty heavy schedule in general. And then Layla decided to join, and she's been with us right after the Krannert Center, so just a little over a year.
So Adam was with you at the Krannert Center?
Yes, he was.
Because I do remember there was a beatboxer there, and I was thinking, now how did that happen? So since I've asked the question, because I was curious then, I'm curious now. What made you decide to... Well, let's back up and say, for those of you who don't know what a beatboxer is, it's essentially a vocal percussionist, pretty common with a cappella groups, where they create bass and drums and other sorts of sounds. And what made you decide to add a beatboxer, however briefly, to a, you know, mostly old-time kind of group?
Well, once Justin left... The past couple of years have been spent trying to reform the group and reform the sound of our ensemble. And we had worked with Adam with another group called the Luminescent Orchestry. We did an EP with that group. And that was how we were introduced to Adam's great beatboxing work. And we decided to have him join us and tried collaborating with him. And that was how we had set up the group for a while. And he was on the album, featured very prominently. And... That was just kind of it. It was all just an organic process. We said, Adam, you feel like joining us? He did, and then we started working on material from there.
And then you wore him out on the road, taking him around so many places. Well, I guess that, I assume anyway, that is one of the ways in which the Carolina Chocolate Drops have worked hard to take what is historically interesting music, as well as musically interesting music, and revitalizing it for the modern age, so to speak. Not that you're intentionally trying to make it modern sounding, but you're trying to inform it with a modern sensibility in some way or another. You want to talk about that a little bit? Where does your music originally come from, and then In a nutshell, what are you trying to do with it to make it a little bit more, I'll use the term relevant because I can't think of another one, but acknowledging it's not a good term.
All right. Well, you know, we started the group in 2005, and we started working with a fellow by the name of Joe Thompson, who was a black fiddler from Mebane, North Carolina. And he was 86 when we met him. He settled in. He passed away this year at 93. But we got to spend several years playing with him and learn his family's tunes. And that was the basis of the Carolina Chocolate Drops originally. So it was the fiddle and banjo music of the North Carolina Piedmont. And so Justin and Renan are both from North Carolina, hence why we're called the Carolina Chocolate Drops. And so that's how we started. But there was always an interest in jug band music and old-time jazz. Renan is a fan of different Celtic music and sings several tunes of that nature. And so there was all of that coming in, and we just were bringing in all the different elements we could. And that was just it from there.
But also you've in this current record and your more recent performances starting to add some other elements, musical elements, maybe a little jazzier, a little bluesier than perhaps you started out.
I think it's just a natural progression from one thing to the other. There was always a bigger interest in a lot of different musics when we first started. And see, when we first started, we were two groups called Sankofa Strings and Carolina Chocolate Drops. And Sankofa Strings was made to do a lot of blues and jazz and show how string band music mixed with that. So it was Rian and myself and another fellow Sule, Greg Wilson. And so we started doing that along with the Chocolate Drops. So a lot of people's first impression was from the Chocolate Drops' first record. So we always did a lot of this other type of material, but people's first impression was just hearing the straight old-time stuff, which I think people enjoyed. And then just over time, we've just had a natural progression to bringing in different material, showing different aspects of string band music and folk music, old time music, and how it relates to being the root of all the different types of music in America.
Well, I want to talk a little bit more about roots music and some of what's at the root of some of this stuff. But since we have you here, why don't we hear you do something a little live?
All right.
Well, a little something live. It'll be very much live. You're right here.
This one here is one called "Your Baby Ain't Sweet Like Mine." This is an old Papa Charlie Jackson number, and he was the first solo blues performer to make popular records, and he played on a six-string banjo. And we'll see if we can whip this one up just a little bit here. "Your Baby Ain't Sweet Like Mine."
Nowadays, I got the one with the sweetest ways. Your baby may roll a jelly fine. Nobody's baby can roll it like mine. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. She bakes a jelly roll all the time. And when I'm feeling lonesome and blue, my baby knows just what to do. Yes, sir, she even called me honey. She even let me spend the money. Never has a baby put me out the door. She even buys me all my clothes. I don't wanna brag, I wanna put you in line. Your baby ain't sweet like mine, oh no. Your baby ain't sweet like mine, I'll get it. Thank you. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. She bake a jelly roll all the time. And when I'm feeling lonesome and blue, my baby know just what to do. Yes, sir, she even called me honey. She even let me spend the money. Never has a baby put me out though. She even buy me all my clothes. I don't wanna brag, I wanna put you in line. Your baby ain't sweet like mine, oh no. Your baby ain't sweet like mine. Cook the bones, hubby.
Carolina Chocolate Drops, three of the four of them anyway, here performing live on Live and Local on FM 90.9. All four of them will be performing tonight at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. I'm Kevin Kelly, and that came off of which year albums?
That's the ones off of Genuine Negro Jig.
Which was the Grammy winner.
Yep.
And probably not the last Grammy winner you'll have, I imagine.
Well, I mean, we can only hope for the best, you know. We just wait to see how it turns out, you know.
You can. Vocalist on that tune, and one of the co-founders of the group, Dom Flemons, he was playing banjo, playing the bones, which is literally true in this case. Or are those actual bones, or are those plastic bones?
Those are actual bones. They're made out of cow ribs that are cut down and bleached and... then played.
Yeah. And then played, that's right. Hubby Jenkins playing those and then playing the cello. Layla McCalla.
Yep.
I want to pronounce that right. How did the bones get to be an instrument? And then did you ever have any idea, Hubby, that starting out on sax and cello and bass that you'd be playing the bones with a group like this?
So surprised you know so much about me already.
It's right in front of me. I read your bio.
Well, the bones, you know, they think the bones are one of the oldest instruments in the world. They're like found in different regions of the world and different cultures. They found them in ancient Egypt, and they think they were sort of like rosary beads for old Egyptian ladies. And they're written about in like the 15th century and like Christian texts and all kinds of crazy stuff. Etc. We think they came to America through Irish immigrants who hung out with slaves and poor blacks, and it became a part of African American music, and then became an important part of minstrelsy, and so forth, so on. And when I got into the bones, I'd sort of was like just starting to get into old time music. I started playing a lot of country blues when I first got into traditional music, and I went to something called Common Ground on the Hill, which is in Westminster, Maryland. And I met a guy there named Michael Baytop, who is an amazing bones player and blues guitarist in his own right, and spent a week learning how to play the bones with him and fell in love with them. It's one of those, like, Harry Potter moments. Like, I picked up the bone, and I was like, oh, this is it. You know, it's going to happen.
What did Harry Potter do that was the equivalent? Pick up a wand?
Yeah, I think he has to go to, like, a building, and you pick up a wand, but some of the wands don't work. Like, the wand picks you.
Oh, that's
you,
right,
isn't it?
So you pick the bones, and...
The bones picked me, you know.
Is there a musical difference, meaning a functional musical difference, between the bones and the spoons?
They're played differently. The spoons sort of... The idea of the bones is, like, you're holding one tightly, and the other one's held loosely. So the loose one is hitting the tight one as you move your wrist around, and... When you play spoons, you're sort of using your body as a way to get that, to get the stillness, to get them to hit against each other. Although I just recently learned that there's a place in Turkey where they do like a dance playing spoons and play them exactly like bones.
But functionally, it's a pretty similar role. You know,
very much
it's
so.
Kind of a rapid fire percussion instruments, because otherwise you don't have drums here.
Oh, no.
In the group. You don't have a drummer, so this is functioning in that way, I guess.
Well, definitely. When we do the full show, I'll play snare drum and bass drum. That was actually what I first started playing when I was in school, and all the way through high school, I played in marching band and stuff like that. So we bring in a little bit of drums, but it's not like a straight drum kit, you know.
It's also interesting, when we were just in Ireland like a month ago, or more than that now, and I went out to a few jams, and you know, one of the jams I went to, they had bones players, but it wasn't something that you played like on every song. You know, it was like the bones are like sort of the function of like percussion, but they're still like a very adding, you know, the song doesn't necessarily need to have the bones, but it adds in a little extra texture. Not necessarily, the rhythm is still there without the bones, et cetera.
Do you ever work horns into your show? I mean, since you've got that in your background anyway, Bobby?
I have not.
The saxophone has not made an appearance.
I haven't picked up a saxophone in a long time. I think the closest we get is kazooing.
Yeah, in the actual show, that's the closest thing. We did a play at the Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago last fall called "Keep a Song in Your Soul," and we had a clarinet and a trombone. It was a really nice big ensemble: ragtime piano, those two horns. Hubby was on the guitar. I had the banjo. Rena was playing fiddle. Oh, it was a great time.
That, you know, since you mentioned the kazoo, I have to say the kazoo was a bone, no pun intended actually, bone of contention between myself and a couple other friends who saw your show at the Krannert Center last year. Because, you know, they said, well, you know, we came to a guitar festival and these guys aren't playing the guitar so much, they're playing the kazoo, and what's that? And I said, yeah, but to play the kazoo the way that was played, particularly by Rhiannon in that particular concert, the implication was, what do you need to know to play the kazoo? And I'm thinking, do you even know how to play the kazoo? The person who was talking, you know, you actually have to sing to be able to play the kazoo.
Sure.
And of course, it's part of it's part of lots of different traditions of music. Brings me a bit to the vocalism of Rhiannon Giddens, which will be the highlight, I'm sure, for some people at the show tonight. It certainly was one of the highlights for me when I heard you all before. And she comes from an operatic background.
Yeah, she does. She graduated from Oberlin Conservatory in vocal performance. You know, but she said she started out early playing folk songs with her dad and singing with her family. So it was when she went into the opera, she had a knowledge of singing songs, not in the classical vein. So for her, she was able to transition between the two once she had gotten the training to be able to sing both types of music.
And then she, like all of you really, started out with one thing in mind musically. And then, you know, even though you've had experiences in your earlier lives, you came to this music a little later. I mean, for example, Layla, did you imagine you'd be doing this when you started in music school as a cellist?
No, but I realized very quickly when I was in school at NYU that I wasn't going to be playing classical music professionally. But I knew that music was something that I wanted to do, you know?
And you realized that you wouldn't because you didn't have that
Because of the culture around classical music, and I felt really isolated by it and not really embraced by it, even though I loved the music itself. I didn't see myself like really. I didn't feel ambitious about it, you know, about that kind of music. It wasn't like, yeah, this is what gets me going and this is all I want to do. It was like, there's so many other kinds of music. And I was living in New York and you're just exposed to so much. And I was actually a cocktail waitress in a music venue. And so I started meeting all these musicians that way. And I was really interested in improvisation. So that's how I started playing with people. But I lived in West Africa when I was in high school. And so I kind of got into like playing groove on cello and what that sounds like and relating it to all these West African 6/8 rhythms. And the more I've learned about the history of that music and how it relates to American music, that's what kind of led me to old time music and different fiddle traditions. And I live in New Orleans now, and so learning a lot about trad jazz, and that's kind of how I fit in here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about something I alluded to before you played that last song, talking about roots music and the roots of some sorts of roots music. In the bio that's on the website, Hubby, you actually make a point of saying that you found it. Well, I'm just going to quote you. It was a big awakening for me to find African Americans at the roots of American music, unquote. And Dom, you and Rhiannon, I think, both came together partly through a gathering called the Black Banjo Gathering or something like that.
Oh, yeah, that was ground zero for starting the group. It was like an academic and a lecture demonstration weekend on the Black and African roots, and there were people that were... there were African players that were there from Mali and Gambia. There was Mike Seeger, the brother of Pete Seeger, great advocate for traditional music. He was there. Don Vappi from Preservation Hall was over there. Many scholars that were interested in minstrel style playing. There was a scholar that studied Caribbean music and banjo. And it was just all these different minds interested in seeing how it all connected. And so that Rena and I were both participants at that event, and it was an amazing experience. And from there, just the idea that we could take that message out there to people was what got us to start the group in the first place. I'm from Arizona originally, and after that event, I just packed up all my stuff and moved and started embracing the music. And that was around that time. That was when we started playing with Joe Thompson. And then we just started gigging. And the interest that grew from us just talking about the Black and African roots of the banjo and playing the music, that was what that's taken us this far along on our journey, is just from that alone.
And you do spend a fair amount of time when you're on tour now, as you did when you got started, specifically working to educate people about these roots.
Absolutely. Like in the shows, we'll mention things like anecdotes and things like that that'll hopefully give people some idea of just a different context of some of the music. And then we also do school programming. We've been out to several universities. Like yesterday, we were over at the Krannert Center, and we talked with some grad students about just music in general. And then also we had a Dr. Davis brought her class out for the African American Vocal Traditions class, and we talked to them a little bit about just some of the different cultural contexts, and then played some music as well. And it's an important thing, because there's a lot of material that's around if you search the archives for Black string bands and what that means for the Black community as well as the white community, because in the end, we're talking about Black string band music, but it's all an interchange of the different races of America, which make American music. So we've always tried to get that idea out there so that people don't have to feel like it's a museum piece, or that they have to feel afraid that they don't understand the history. Because as Americans, there's a lot of history that I think we haven't touched upon, we haven't really analyzed, and we haven't spent looking at critically enough. So that's just something that we try to do just in a very small way.
Well, we're talking with the members of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, who are going to be at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts tonight at 7:30 on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana. They're with us live in our studio here on Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly. The program the concert tonight has actually been sold out for a while. However, I am told that you have the exclusive information, you out in radio land, that there have been some turnbacks for some tickets, and therefore there are some tickets available. And inevitably, some folks don't show up anyway. So you might want to call the center at 217, I think I'm going to remember this number right, 333-6280. I don't know why I remember that phone number, but that is the phone number for the Krannert Center. Our program today is made possible by the Illinois State University School of Music's presenting a Gold Series concert on Thursday, November 15th at 8 p.m. at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts. The Wind Symphony will premiere David Maslanka's new composition for saxophone, quartet, and wind ensemble. Why don't we hear something else live from you before we go back to the latest CD for a little bit and maybe give us some context, since you were talking about context.
All right. Well, here's a little something. Like when we met up with Layla, she was interested in Haitian folk music, and we actually just bought a copy of the box set of Alan Lomax in Haiti, and didn't even get a chance to listen to it. Just passed it off to her because she had an interest since her family's from Haiti, and she's been bringing a couple of her tunes into the mix. But she can talk about it just as well as I could, if not more.
Yeah, the kind of music that I've been exploring is kind of like Haiti's old time music, and I learned about it. Just looking to connect with my roots and just kind of interested in what that would sound like. And the more I listened to this type of music, I was like, this is amazing. Like, how does no one know any, you know, no one knows anything about this. Not nobody, but, you know, the community is so small. So that's part of my little personal mission now, is to share some of these songs with people. This one's called Rosemary, and it's I'm going to sing it in Haitian Creole. It's about a woman who falls in love with a flaky musician, and the song is all in third person. It's saying, you brought him to the door, find a way to live with him. He's a musician. Basically.
Isn't flaky musician redundant?
No, no? Not at
okay,
all. We're
not
here.
At all. Yeah.
We were on time. Ready?
You.
Listen, zami, listen for me, wo. Rosemary, say what mene dodo supotai. Cheche maye pour vivre avec l'eau. Oui, maman, musicien, c'est trois blancs, wo. Pagé, maman, pagé, papa, wo. Listen, zami, listen for me, wo. Pagé, maman, pagé, papa, wo. Listen, zami, listen for me, wo. Cheche maye pou viva velo. Mwen mama, musicien se dra blan. Avio, 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 avio.
That means get it together.
Avio, 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 avio.
Three-fourths of the Carolina Chocolate Drops here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, playing live in her studio. All four-fourths will be at the Granite Center tonight at 7:30 for a concert in Urbana. And that song featured Layla McCalla on Well, on the vocal and on the small banjo. What kind of banjo do you call
it? Tenor banjo.
Tenor banjo. Dom Flemons playing the regular.
Oh, this was
well, semi-regular banjo.
So this was a four-string plectrum banjo.
And there's a story, I guess, in your acquiring the four-string technique, but more on that maybe in a minute. And then Hubby Jenkins, what, was that just a small guitar, or does that have a particular name you were playing?
It's parlor-sized guitar, but it's just a regular guitar.
Parlor-sized guitar. Yeah. I don't think I've heard reference to that before.
Well, it was just around the turn of the century, it was just... you know, they were really pushing for women in the parlor to learn like pop tunes and stuff off of sheet music on the guitar, and so that's kind of where the name came from. It just would be something people would have in their houses.
Partly because it maybe not as loud, and you could play it in the parlor and not bother the people in the bedroom or something like that.
Pretty much,
or whatever room you might be in. I wanted to ask you, Layla, you made reference to having moved to New Orleans, and you're from New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there's this vibrant musical culture in New Orleans. Some of it is Creole, and you mentioned that you sang this in Haitian Creole. Mm-hmm. Any connection there to between your move to New Orleans and discovering
trying
Haitian. To go back to those other roots of yours?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I moved to New Orleans, I started learning more. I guess around that time, I started learning more about Haitian history and the Haitian Revolution and realized, oh, a bunch of people from Haiti moved to New Orleans after the Haitian Revolution, and then they moved back. And so there's like this cultural exchange that's been happening for, you know, I guess 2 centuries now. And just started reading about it, and, you know, I'd go to cemeteries, walk around cemeteries in New Orleans, and there would be my mother's maiden name, you know, on some of the, and even my grandmother's maiden name. My last name, McCalla, comes from my dad's dad, who was Jamaican, which is why it's not French sounding. But, yeah, it really struck me that I was sort of in this place where Creole culture exists still, but a lot of the history remains kind of uncovered.
And what took you to New Orleans in the first place?
Well, I had been visiting New Orleans for a couple of years, playing in the street, paying my way to go visit. I initially started going during Jazz Fest, and then I just fell in love with the city, and then I really was kind of creatively sapped in New York, kind of living a very typical, I wouldn't say starving artist, but just doing a lot of things that didn't feel very meaningful. Mm. And so when I moved to New Orleans, it was kind of like, I'm taking a stance. I'm going to make meaning out of music again. And so.
Yeah, but now, what were you doing to make that meaning, though? Because you weren't playing old-time music when we first met you.
No, I was playing Bach in the street. But I actually was playing a little bit of old-time music. That's kind of started when I started getting into old-time and Cajun music, but I wasn't playing that on the street very often, at least, because I, you know, I'm from a classical background. I know how to play some Bach, Bach cello suite movements.
He wrote some pretty important pieces for the cello.
Yeah. That music is pretty important, and it was a great way for me to just keep my fingers moving and keep practicing and stay focused on something.
In fact, you're not alone in the group of spending a fair amount of time on the street, meaning playing on the street, playing music on the street. Hubby, you spent a lot of time, if I remember, doing exactly that in subways of New York and so on.
Sure. That was a big way. That was a big part of me learning a lot of old-time tunes and learning how to perform and, you know, how to get people's attention. And I also did a fair amount of traveling, kind of just being a bum and playing on the streets of different cities.
Hobo is the term you use.
Hobo, that's right.
That's sort of like an old-fashioned term for street person.
Except street person who plays music in your case. Yeah, so that's what I did, and that was a big part of me learning how to play and meeting people and making friends and supporting myself in New York. And
what point did you run into these guys?
Back home in New York, I had a few friends. And we all sort of got into old-time music simultaneously, and we were living together in an apartment in Queens, and we used to spend a lot of time in Washington Square Park when it was still friendly towards musicians, which is a different story now. But so we used to spend a lot of time there just playing music and meeting other people, and one of my roommates met Dom there, and Dom ended up sleeping on our couch, or on our floor, I can't remember, in our house, and I just met him through that. And it was sort of a big deal to meet a black person playing old-time music because I had not met one up until that point in my own journey into old-time music. So I think we sort of hit it off from there.
I guess I never really gave much thought to that myself. Now I have to think about it. All the folks who play old-time around here, what color are they? I don't know. I never really thought about it. Is it really that unusual? Or was it just unusual in your experience? I don't know the answer to that question. I don't have any.
There are not a lot of black string bands running around the country right now. That's for sure.
Not anymore, anyway. Right?
Yeah. In New York City, it's hard enough alone just to find anyone playing old-time music. But, I think after the folk revival happened in the 50s and 60s, it became even more associated with being sort of a white sort of thing. And even when I started playing blues music, you know, for my family, they'd be like, "Why are you playing bluegrass?" Or, you know, "Why are you playing country music?" Or I'd play gigs for black people and they would not understand what I was doing at all. So that was my experience definitely playing in New York City, for sure, was sort of being alone in this ocean of, that of
was,
music.
That was one of the underlying things in the Black Banjo Gathering when I first went out there. It was also a community building experience because there were about, I'd say, a dozen black string band players of different sorts from across the country. And it was also an effort to try to let everybody know that they weren't alone out there and that there was a community, and trying to build that community around that. And so that was something too, just, you know, because there, if you bring everybody together that's across the country, you can get a fair sized group of people. You know, you get like Otis Taylor, Guy Davis, even Keb Mode does some banjo.
Taj Mahal, of course,
Corey Harris. I mean, and Don Vappy too. You know, there is a community of musicians that are out there, and so it's always trying to just outreach to let everybody know that, hey, you know, you can call somebody, we can try to work together and just try to get the music out there, just to create awareness about it.
Is there any sort of notion of reclaiming some of this music? I'm just thinking, and I might be historically inaccurate here, so feel free to correct me if I've got it all mixed up, but early minstrel shows were involving black musicians. Later minstrel shows seems like they were appropriated by white people in blackface and then changing that whole notion of music.
Well, actually, with minstrel shows, see, it started out with your black musicians in the folk tradition, and then there were white people that either knew those black people. You think like Mark Twain, you know, it's like folks that would go across the tracks to either learn or to know more about the music. And so those were the first blackface minstrels. And so they were trying to say, oh, we're doing the authentic black music. And then over time, once it became commercialized, it grew into something else that became just varying degrees of denigration, and sometimes it was, you know, so it was just varying degrees. Once it gets popular, it goes all over the place. And it also coincided with the black community and the Great Migration, where black people were moving away from the country, and just that idea of being country, moving to the cities, especially in Reconstruction, trying to get away from that old way of living and find a new way of living. And so the banjo, I believe, was one of those victims of that, where, you know, with just that whole movement, the banjo is such a country instrument and so based in the earth. It's just, you know, it just kind of got left behind. And so as younger black people in a new generation, it's been important for us to acknowledge and to play the music, and also try to show people that it's not all bad. We don't have to just throw it all out. The baby does not need to go out with the bathwater. It can be a valid part of the community and a valid part of African-American history, and really making sure to point out African-American instead of African or Caribbean all the time, because that's a very important part of our culture as well.
Sure. We're talking with members of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, who are going to be at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts tonight for a show at 7:30. Late release tickets, by the way, become available at 6:30, since, as I mentioned earlier, technically it's sold out. There are some we know, or at least there were, as of several minutes ago. There were some that had been turned back, and inevitably there are. So late release is at 6:30 this evening. The phone number for the Krannert Center, 217-333-6280. Our broadcast today on Live and Local is made possible with support from the Sousa Archives and Center for American Music, preserving our nation's musical heritage at the University of Illinois, now featuring new exhibits entitled America's Musical Past, Shenanigans, Hootenannies, and Other Twisted Adventures. More information is available at sousaarchives.org. We've been talking about the banjo, string band music, and earlier we're talking about the vocalism of the absent member of the Carolina Chocolate Drops. And I thought we'd take a little break here and hear from your most recent CD, the CD being called Leaving Eden, the very last track on there, in which there are no strings at all. In fact, there are no instruments at all. And it just shows off Rhiannon Giddens's, what for me is just a fabulously expressive and technically wonderful voice. Any particular background to this song, Pretty Bird?
Well, that song, you know, I'd heard Rhiannon sing that song several years back. That one's actually from Hazel Dickens, a great West Virginia songstress who she passed away just last year as we were finishing the album. And she and Alice Gerard recorded many albums together, and that was one a cappella number that Hazel used to do. And I heard Rhiannon sing it at a different recording session that she didn't end up using the recording for. And so we were coming in to do this particular album. I had mentioned it to her that she should sing that song and get it out on an album. And she was like, I don't know, you know, just use the old recording. I said, well, you know, it's been 3 or 4 years. You're going to sing it differently than you did before. And so she put down that wonderful vocal right there in the studio.
It's called Pretty Bird, Rhiannon Giddens of the Carolina Chocolate Drops. Not live on Live and Local, but from their CD called Leaving Eden.
Fly away, little pretty bird. And pretty always stay. I see in your eyes a promise. Your own tender love you'll bring. But fly. Love's own tender flames warm this meeting, and love's tender song you'll sing, but fly. Cannot make you no promise, for love is such a delicate thing. So fly away, little pretty bird. Clip your wings, fly away, little pretty bird, fly. Fly far beyond the dark mountains to where you'll be free evermore.
That was the voice of Rhiannon Giddens of the Carolina Chocolate Drops. That tune ends their most recent CD out earlier this year, I guess, called Leaving Eden. And you can get more information on the Carolina Chocolate Drops at their web address, which I didn't actually write down. Is it just...
CarolinaChocolateDrops.com.
That's what you'd expect, I guess. Lots of info on there, by the way. You can find out some of the history we've explored about the music and about these individual performers and how the band got started. And, of course, you can buy that CD. You can buy their older CDs. You had a CD not long ago in which you collaborate with another group. You mentioned this group earlier.
Yeah, that was with the Luminescent Orchestra. That was where I mentioned where we had first collaborated with Adam. And it's a nice four-song disc.
That one's an EP.
Yeah, that one's an EP. Mm-hmm. So we had a good time jamming with them, and we said, let's just take it into the studio, and then we cut it, and then it sat around for a few years, and then we finally got to release it last year.
And then your one before that, the Grammy winner mentioned, is the Genuine Negro Jig. And you had one before that.
Yeah.
Did I understand you earlier to say that some of the first music you did in that first CD, you're coming back to a little bit now?
Oh, that's a lot of the straight old time music.
That's the straight old time. Okay.
So our group always comes back to the old time fiddling banjo stuff, because just some of those breakdowns is just irresistible. And the heart of the band has always been as a dance group, and so getting that beat going and trying to get people out of their seats and moving, that's been a strong mission of ours, is to get, you know, because folk music, a lot of the time, since it's gone through classical music over the years, it tends to be a symposium where everybody sits and listens. But a lot of the folk tradition around the old-time music is getting up and dancing and interacting with the music. So we always encourage that in every show.
Well, that just raises a whole other image, doesn't it? The concert that I heard at the Krannert Center last fall, during the guitar festival, I don't recall anybody getting up and dancing. But I imagine you must do a fair number of shows in pretty small venues where that's a little easier to do.
Well, it's always a crapshoot, you know, because we appeal to art centers and performing art centers where the theaters aren't made for getting up and dancing. Like, we'll have a orchestra pit this time, so we're hoping we can drop down the front so that there will be some room to dance. But when we get into clubs, there will be some dancing. You know, we have a lot of different places we'll play.
Do you ever play just for dances?
Not anymore. We started out doing that, but then it got to the spot where we were having too much conflict with people who wanted to just hear our music compared to the dancers being there just to do the dancing. So it started getting very hard to maneuver that.
Sounds like the classical crowd has been a little influential in your audiences then.
Oh, well, you know, it's good for sitting and listening and also for dancing. So you can't fault anybody for it, you know.
And you can always tap your feet.
Oh, yeah.
And slap your knee and go along with the bones. You've got the bones out here.
Yeah.
I guess we're going to hear some.
Yeah, we'll do this this last one here. This is one hubby brought in.
It's a song called Buck Creek Girls that I learned playing at house parties in New York City. Where
Buck,
people dance drunkenly.
Buck Creek.
Buck Creek,
Creek Girls.
Girls. Don't get it twisted, kids. Thank you.
that song, You're Your Own Caller. That one really cries out for some dancing of a particular variety.
For sure. One of the people I learned that song from was a guy named John Cohen who played in a band called the New Lost City Ramblers. And they do like one of, what's it called? There's No Way Out or...
There Ain't No Way Out.
There Ain't No Way Out. And it's like one of the best, recorded old-time albums ever heard. And so on that version, when he does a little bit of calling when he sings it, but... It's definitely dance music for sure.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the name of a couple of bands we had on the show a year ago, and they specialized in square dance, country dance shows, and they had a caller with them who you know seemed like this completely punked out kind of guy you never thought would be doing calling square dances, but a guy named T Claw.
That's right.
You know him?
No. The name is awesome.
That name sounds really familiar.
Yeah, I can't remember the name of the band because the name of the band was great too. But
I remember when I was hoboing in Nashville and met like a bunch of punk kids, who fashionably punk and attitude, etc. But who were really into like old time music and really into playing it. I think, I've always wondered like what's the connection there, and I think it's just like the music is so accessible. The music is so... Folk music is, music that anyone can do and everyone can do. So I think it can travel. It can be created on the spot. It can be created solo. It can be created in a group. And I think that really attracts to a lot of traveling kids and a lot of punk kids and everybody else, you know.
And if you can't play the music, you can always dance to it.
Or get a kazoo.
That's right. But learn how to play it right. That's sing right. Well.
Yeah.
These are members of the Carolina Chocolate Drops, Dom Flemons, Hubby Jenkins, and Layla McCalla, and they'll be joined by Rhiannon Giddens tonight at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts for a show at 7:30. Late release tickets go on sale at 6:30, and we are delighted to have had the chance to have you guys live on the show with us. Thanks very much for coming in.
And thanks for having us.
Thanks.
And here are some other events you can see and hear live in our listening area over the next couple of days. Donnie Heitler has his weekly solo jazz piano gig at the Great Impasta in Urbana this evening at 6 o'clock. Another weekly event, the traditional Irish music session in downtown Champaign, is at Dublin O'Neill's. That is at 8:30. Also weekly event on Wednesdays, the Gunny Sack Review of Bluegrass and Gospel Music at the Yoder Center in Arthur. That is at 7 o'clock. The Martirano Awards Concert, named for Sal Martirano, formerly of the University of Illinois, composition faculty, is tonight at 7:30 at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Jammin' Jimmy Bean and Friends, an acoustic experience, is at Bentley's Pub in Champaign this evening at 6 o'clock. At Parkland Theater, it's a double bill of plays, Too Much Light Makes the Baby Go Blind and The Actor's Nightmare. That's tonight at 7:30, and I believe that continues for a while yet. Illinois State University Civic Chorale presents Handel's Messiah at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts in Normal. That's tonight at 8 o'clock. Millikan Fall Jazz Concert is at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Decatur tomorrow evening at 7:30. It's a concert of Johannes Brahms' instrumental music featuring pianist Ian Hobson and colleagues at Smith Memorial Hall on the University of Illinois campus in Urbana tomorrow night at 7:30. The Aduro Trio play at the Krannert Center in Urbana for Uncorked. Actually, I believe that they are not playing. I heard that one of them is ill. Never mind about that one. Kevin Hart and the Vibe Tribes at Boo Boo's Doghouse in Bloomington tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. And the ISU Wind Symphony is at the ISU Center for the Performing Arts in Normal tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. You're listening to 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translator W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music and More for Central Illinois. We're a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois. Tomorrow's show will have a live band called Del Sur playing music from Latin America, which should be a lot of fun. And we'll go out with another from the Carolina Chocolate Drops, Leaving Eden. This is from South Africa. It's called Mahala.